would for him and many others, I would have gotten this program, okay? He's one of the reasons why I keep coming back and decided to stay. Ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome.
Russell Sands.
Secretary report.
Not now, John.
I've heard it speak several times, and I've gotten some out of its message every time. That's why I chose to stop coming back and just stay. Help me welcome Russell Spack.
Try to get this. I've come prepared tonight. We're gonna get a little serious here. My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. We won't get too serious, but maybe a little serious. I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981, and I'm grateful to God for that. And you know how you become an old timer, just don't drink and don't die. And that's the way it has. So I've been managing to do that. I'm not even sure I'm officially an old timer yet. I went to the International. I don't know how many people are going to the International in Atlanta in July. You ought to go there if you've never been to there. It's unbelievable. But last time I went to the International, I think 5 years ago, they had it in San Antonio. And now you got to understand something. My second sponsor was a guy named Joe Snyder. Was a wonderful guy. And he told me once, he said, I don't even consider you sober until you have 10 years. And so when I got 10 years, I said, Joe, I got 10 years now, I'm sober. And he says, no, I meant 20. And so they've always been pulling that stuff on me, you know, moving the goalposts. So I was in San Antonio. I don't know what I had. I had 30 years or something like that. And I they had a table and it said old timers. So I said, well, maybe I'll mosey on over there and see whether I like qualify. You know, I mean, it's, you know, you don't get rid of all that ego. So maybe they got my name there or something. Maybe get something. You know, so I went over there and I said. So I asked him, I said, is the old day? He says, well, what do I have to do? I got 30 years, what do you have to do to be an old day? He says, 40. They got some sort of conspiracy going. I don't know what the deal is. Well, we'll figure this thing out. You'll figure this thing out. You know, this is supposedly, I think it's like a third step. I don't know. Is this the third time I'm up here? Yeah, well, the dirty little secret about my step series is they're basically 12 weeks of step three. Have you figured that out yet? There's other steps in there. You'll get other steps out of them, but it's based, because if you don't get step three, it don't even matter anyway. It ain't going to happen for you, in my humble opinion. I could be wrong. I've been around for a long time. I've watched what the deal is. And if you get step three, it's all going to happen for you. Don't even worry about it. It's cooked, because the whole thing is about step three. You know, but they disguise it with all this other stuff, because if they tell you right off the bat, your alcoholic will say, that's a bunch of bullshit, I'm out of here. So the whole thing, everything you're doing, all these steps, everything is designed to get you to the point where you're at step 11, you say, now that you have a relationship with God, improve on that relationship. And then go out and tell others. That's the whole program. It's all about God. That's probably why they say there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. They got these little hints all over the thing, you know? These little hints. See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass in you and countless others. God either is or he isn't. Chapter to the agnostics. It says, he either is or he isn't. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life would have helped us, we'd be well a long time ago. But they didn't save us. Lack of power is our dilemma. We had to find the power greater than ourselves, and that means we wrote a book, we're going to talk about God. Here we alcoholics get pissed off and everything like that. This sort of attitude has to be abandoned. We're now on a new basis, the basis of trusting in God. We've got to quit playing God. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of our trouble. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, we step on the toes of others, they retaliate, seemingly without provocation, but we realize in the past we made decisions based upon self because we're selfish shits. All we do is think about ourselves. Where self will run riot, but we don't think so. Above everything, we must get rid of the self. The self will kill us, not the alcohol. The alcohol will kill us, but the self will drive us back to the alcohol. We must get rid of self. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. When we sincerely took this position, all sorts of remarkable things happened, like you get rocketed in the fourth dimension existence. You experience much of heaven. Being all-powerful. It's not a higher power. He's the highest power. Being all-powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his work well. We start losing concern for our little plans and designs. We start thinking about how we can help other people. We start realizing we have a God presence. We lose fear of today, yesterday, and the hereafter. We are reborn. We thought well before taking this step, being sure that we could turn our lives utterly over to him. This isn't my opinion. This is the book Alcoholics Anonymous, along with the 10,000 other statements they make in that book, all about turning your life over to God, all over the place. We lose prejudice even against organized religion. We begin to see where they're right. We encourage church membership, get closer to God, hang out with people that talk about God, focus on God. Going to the sixth step, that's the one that separates the men from the boys. You know, it's not about money, property, prestige, or romance, or any of that other stuff you're addicted to besides the alcohol, because you need all that stuff in order to feel like you're a man or a woman, because you're a piece of shit without that stuff, because you hate yourself. Like Dr. Carl Menninger said in the 1930s, alcoholics are men and women who have to destroy themselves. They hate themselves with the alcohol, they take themselves without the alcohol. That's why when you're lathering up in the shower and you hear that voice that says you're a piece of shit and you ought to be dead and you'll never make it, and you turn around and see who's in the shower with you and you're the only one there, that's where those voices come from. Those voices don't go away just because you stop drinking. They get louder. You drink to get rid of the voices. You drink to get rid of the voices saying, don't go out. You know, guys, when it says, don't go up to that girl, she's going to turn you down because you're a piece of shit. You drink to get rid of that voice so you can go up and ask her to dance. You drink to be able to have sex because you're scared to have it without the drink. You drink because you're a worthless piece of shit. You're a nothing. You're always going to be a nothing. You've never anything but a nothing. I used to put something in my body. It turned me into an almost. When you're nothing, almost is top of the world. That's alcoholism. Unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences. There's a lot of consequences to being an alcoholic. His sobriety will be precarious. If true happiness, he'll find none at all. Now, that's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's all about finding God. Finding God, trying to talk about God, and getting people to come on over and surrender to God and make God the central fact of their lives when they don't want to hear any of that shit. Before, during, or even after stopping drinking. They just don't want to hear it. Sounds preachy. I don't want to hear it. And until you surrender completely, half measures avail us nothing. Old ideas have to go out the window. You can't manage your life, even though you'll manage it for 15, 20, 30 years until it just beats the crap out of you and you say, what's wrong with me? I've been sober for 20 years and I'm still a worthless piece of crap. No wife, no husband, no romantic interest, nothing, no car, no boat. Nothing's going to save you. Only God could and would if he was sought. And that's what you have to be. And after that, it says being convinced of that, being convinced. How do you get convinced? You think you're convinced just because you go to a meeting and hold hands and say the Lord's Prayer? You think convinced because you get down on your knees and you say the third step prayer? How long does it take to get convinced? So I'm going to tell you about my third steps. We're going to talk a little bit about surrender, you know, and that sort of deal. We'll talk about a bunch of things. You know, I want to read you some things from the big book just in case. You know, I always like to read stuff from the big book so you don't think it's totally my personal opinion. It's my personal opinion. It's my opinion based upon 34 years of road testing this thing through the cancer, through the, you know, married for 34 years, raising 4 kids, 6 grandkids, self-supporting through my own country. Out there in the craziness, out there in the jungle, doing this thing. It's nice to read about it, but, you know, it's nice to read about it and read about the steps and read about all this stuff, but how do you do it when you're out there in hand-to-hand combat with the worldly clamors? Those things, because they're not out there to try to help you. They're there to drag you away from God. You know, that's what you talk about in the discussion meetings. You talk about the material stuff. I had to look up the word spiritual. It says, you know what spiritual means? That which is non-material. That which is I've never worried about non-material stuff in my flipping life. That which is, and they lump romance into material things. My whole life is about worried about him, her, it, that, this. never worried about God. It's worried about all the stuff that I'm addicted to. Yeah, I was addicted to alcohol. I used alcohol. I found no woman, no car, no amount of money ever worked quite as well and quite as fast as just a few drinks. So I drank it because it worked. Men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, discontented, screwed up, whatever you want to say, you know? Just not capable of handling life. You know, it's like I said in the last meeting, I think, you know, as I was coming down the chute, you know, and God was spraying that insulation shit on whatever, on all the little babies so that they could handle the bullshit that is US-1 and all the other crap that's going on. As I was coming down, somebody said, oh God, he looked up and I went by, screwed from the beginning. Didn't get my insulation, you know? You know, didn't get my, you know, it's all those, all that crap, you know, that caused you to do all those things that are also part of alcoholism. It's all about alcohol, you know, but alcohol, I used alcohol because nothing worked quite as well as just a few drinks. But other things worked. Other things worked. Stuff works, you know. Things work. Cars work. Women work. Sex work. It all works. You can get addicted to all. Get addicted to the world. Get addicted to worldly clamors. That's what Bill Wilson said. He finally got this thing, and then he was dragged away because of worldly clamors, mostly with themselves. And they got. Man, I'll tell you, they got the billboards out there. They're making billions of dollars. It's all about the worldly clamors. It's all about buy this, you'll be okay. You'll finally not be a piece of shit. Get this, you'll be okay. Yeah, you're okay now, guys, because you got that good-looking gal. But as soon as she leaves, you're a piece of shit. Yeah, you got money in the bank, you're feeling pretty large, but as soon as the money goes down, you're a piece of crap. Yeah, you look good because you're buff and you've been going to the gym, but as soon as that starts going, you're a piece of shit. Everything you've gone out there to grab, you can't even hold on to. Because you don't have no power, you have no control. You try to get the control, you try to figure it out, it's all a bunch of fear, living life on fear. You know, not being able to sit in one place at one time and being satisfied, supremely satisfied and justified in your own skin as to who and what you are. That's alcoholism. You know, a million voices in your mind, all sorts of bad shit about yourself and other people. Sober. Alcohol is a symptom of the disease. That's what it says in the book. The real disease centers in your mind, not your body. You can get rid of the drinking, how are you going to get rid of the thinking? You're thinking about all the people that, you know, what are they going to think about you if you lose the car? What are they going to think about you if your house gets foreclosed? What are they going to think about you because of that thing you did or that thing you said or the way you chaired that meeting or what you did here? All you're doing is thinking about him, thinking about what they're going to be thinking about you, worrying about what other people think about you for 8 hours. You do that shit, you know, worrying about what people think about you, you know, and then you tell yourself, well, I don't give a shit what other people think about me. And you start worrying about them again, you know what I mean? And you have all these thoughts going through your mind about shit that may happen to you. You know, wrongdoings of others, fancy to real, have the power to kill. You know, crap that probably will never happen, 9 out of 10 times. And you can't put it down, you can't stop worrying about it. You're not drinking, you're just thinking. After 3 days worried about the same bullshit that you have no control over, you haven't been able to come up with an idea of how to do it or what to do or whatever it is, you just keep on thinking the same thing over and over and over again, you know? You go to a meeting, you dump it and everything, and you're still worried about it, you can't get rid of it. Finally, at 3 o'clock in the morning, you say to yourself, you come to a realization, I've been thinking about this thing for 3 days. It's gonna kill me. You know, this is driving me nuts. I can't get to sleep. I gotta stop thinking about this stuff. And you agree with yourself. You agree you gotta stop thinking about it, and then 30 seconds later you're thinking about it again. they say we'll experience much of heaven, we'll be rocketed in the fourth dimension existence. You know, they say there's a separation of the men from the boys. You know, there's a lot of people that stop drinking in here, because to be a member in Alcoholics Anonymous, all you need is a desire to stop drinking. To be a member of the Fellowship of the Spirit, there's a different qualification. Not everybody makes the Fellowship of the Spirit. It's a narrow road, few find it. Most people go on the broad highway, thumb-sucking crybabies, but, you know, not drinking beer, but hanging out at AA meetings, drinking coffee. Same bullshit going on, it's just they're not drinking. Listen, it's better than drinking. At least they're not running over three-year-olds, but they still haven't experienced the rocket ship ride. They're still not free, and they're still in bondage. They're in bondage to sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and all the other stuff. Because they haven't made the full surrender, because they can't, they just can't. They're just like they can't stop drinking. They can't stop drinking, thinking, they can't let go. So let's see what the book has to say about this in some reading material, and then we'll talk a little bit more about this. The guy in the glass. when you get what you want and you struggle for pelf, pelf is P-E-L-F. It's an old English word. It means stuff. It means stuff. You know, if you want to know what pelf is, I'll tell you what pelf is. Pelf is after this meeting is done and you're, you know, after you, you know, I'm the dancing monkey. After you're done looking at the dancing monkey and I distract you from all the other worldly shit that you like to think about, that you can't stop thinking about, and you get in your car and you drive off, pelf is what you start thinking about. Pelf is what you were thinking about before you got here. Pelf is what you're going to be thinking about after you leave here. Pelf is what you're going to be thinking about when you go to bed tonight. Pelf is what you're going to be watching TV about. When you go to movies, you're going to be thinking about pelf because it's all about glorifying pelf. Pelf is what the world worships. Pelf is what the movie stars are. Kim Kardashian, it's pelf, you know what I mean? The whole world is filled with pelf. Bill Wilson called it worldly clamors. You know, you're addicted to it. You're addicted to the sex. You're addicted to the drugs. You're addicted to the rock and roll. You know, if you only had that blouse, it would fix you. If you only had, you know, if you're only, you have decided and you know that if only I was a yes butter and an if onlyer. You know what I mean? If I only had this and I chased around the world, you know, boy, I'll tell you, I chased her. I was looking for her. She was, man. I wanted what she had. I was willing to go to any length to get it. Let me tell you something. I spent more money I didn't have charging shit on, you know, on my credit cards that I didn't have, buying crap I didn't need to impress people I didn't even like than you could possibly imagine, and then going to AA meetings and complaining about how I'm always broke. You know? And my sponsor would say, well, you know, when you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. I didn't know that. I was a Department of Honors of Mathematics, never figured that out. Because I had to have it, I had to spend. I had to, you know. He used to say, simplify your life. I said, what do you mean by? I know what he meant by that. Get rid of the Cadillac. But if I get rid of the Cadillac, what are they going to think? If I drive a Chevy, you know what I mean? I mean, it's just because what is it? How's that? How's that sober? What does that have to do with sober? That's not sober. Sober is to be free, the new freedom. How do you get that new freedom? Where you stop worrying, and not start having that anxiety. And, you know, you listen, if you think alcoholics get pissed off when you go up to them before they're ready and you say to them, you've got an alcohol problem. Have you ever seen an alcoholic who's not ready to stop drinking and you go up to them? Man, I deal with them all the time and I say, you know, maybe you have an alcohol. You ever see what happens to them? They go ballistic. Mind your own frickin' business. Who the hell do you think you are? They got every line in the book to beat the crap out of you for even daring to even explain. You know, you think, well, what do you think alcoholics sound like when you say to them, why don't you stop thinking about the girls? Why don't you stop thinking about the money? Why don't you stop thinking about the job? You want to know something? The same attitude, the same bullshit, the same mind your own business. You got your program, I got mine. I don't want to hear this bullshit. The same denial that all they do is think about that. Same denial all over the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I mean? It's the same shit. Except they're not drinking their booze. You know what I mean? They're buying their booze. They're thinking, they're obsessing about their booze. They're just addicted to the worldly shit. And they got a program that says, take your eyes away from that crap and look at him. Look at him, you won't need any of that stuff. If you get it, it'll be pleasing, but it won't be that pleasing where you'll have to need it. If you don't get it, if you have to lose everything you have, as long as you're looking at him, it doesn't even matter, because the only thing that's necessary in your life is your relationship with God. You know, with him, you're everything. Without him, you're nothing. You know, listen, if you're a goof, you know, without the Cadillac, you're a goof with the Cadillac. If you're an idiot without the gal, you're an idiot with the gal. You know what I mean? It's real simple. That's why it says we experience much of heaven. We've been rocking forth much of heaven. The great fact is this and nothing less, which I think means nothing less. Nothing less than this. We've had a total revolution in our mind. Revolution, the way we think about things. It's not a revolution if you're still chasing after or thinking after the same shit. You're just doing what you were doing without the booze. They say the revolution is the central fact in our lives. You know what the central fact in our lives is? That means the central fact in your life. That means the thing that's the number one most important thing to you in your life, more important than anything else, is the thing you think about, the thing you want, the thing you focus on, where you focus. The central fact in our lives is the absolute certainty. Does that sound like doubt? Does that sound like, well, I'm not sure? Well, I'm an agnostic. Maybe yes, maybe no. The absolute certainty that God lives in our hearts and minds in a way which is indeed miraculous. He is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. What does that sound like to you? It sounds to me like God working miracles and working that psychic change. We read the promises before. Everybody wants the promises. Nobody understands what you have to do in order to get the promises permanently. It says, after the promise, it says, we finally realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. It's all about Him. It's all about the relationship with Him. You don't got this deal. You don't got Him. You know, you forget about it. It told me you can 12-step, 13-step, 5-step, 7-step. You can do the whole shit. You don't have a relationship with God, you're missing the whole point. You're going to the banquet where they're serving lobster, stone crabs, everything. You're walking away with a ham sandwich. The guy in the glass. Once you realize that it's all about Him and it's all about God and having a relationship with God and what they were doing, and that's what they were doing between 35 and 39. And that's the rocket ship ride, and that's what Phil Wilson was. And that's what AA is, not the way it is today. That's what it was. When they wrote the big book in 1939, they said they were sober, they were rocketing in the fourth dimension, they were experiencing miracles. The guy in the bed, they said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. They didn't say, like, if you do a little about it, if you do it, he says, you do what we did, you'll get what we got. And the one thing they weren't doing, they weren't reading the big book, because it wasn't invented yet. They were reading the Holy Bible. Now, I'm sorry, you're entitled to your opinion, you're just not entitled to your facts. You're not entitled to your own facts. You're just not. That's the fact of life. Read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. Get yourself straight as to what was going on. Get yourself into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't rely on the wisdom of the rooms. Every once in a while, the rooms come up with something. But the rooms are, you know, this isn't exactly Well People's Anonymous. I don't know if you realize that. This isn't exactly your bastion of mental health here. You know what I mean? This is a lot of people with a lot of issues and a lot of situations, you know. Some of them sober, some not. Some want what we have. Some don't even know what we have. Some don't give a shit about what we have. They want what they had. And this is this whole incredible program being filtered through a bunch of craziness, you know what I mean? And people coming up with all sorts of shit, how to do this thing and stay sober without really doing it, without really changing much. Why don't you read the program? Why don't you read what they were doing between 35 and 39? It might shock the shit out of you. And then, you read some of the conference approved stuff, you know, like the Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. When you get what you want and you struggle for pelf and the world makes you king for a day, then go struggle for pelf. And the world makes you king for a day, then go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that guy has to say. For it isn't your father or mother or wife whose judgment upon you must pass. The fellow whose verdict counts most in your life is the guy staring back in the glass. He's the fellow to please, never mind all the rest, for he's with you clear up to the end, and you've passed your most dangerous, difficult test if the guy in the glass is your friend. You may be like Jack Horner and chisel a plum and think you're a wonderful guy, but the man in the glass says you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. You can fool the whole world down the pathway of years and get pats on the back as you pass, but your final reward will be heartache and tears if you've cheated the guy in the glass. Don't cheat the guy in the glass. Don't cheat that guy. So I'm going to read you. This is from Bill C. We're going to talk about a little stuff in the book, and then I'm going to, you know, book stuff, you know, pure AA. So here's a little something I like to read about the pelf, the fudge of your life. What's the fudge in your life? What's your fudge? You know? What's your fudge? The Forgotten Mountain. This is from A's Comes of Age, Bill Wilson, on page 100, if you want to check it out, it's Bill Caesar. You know, nothing up my sleeve, this is all A. When I was a child, I acquired some of the traits that had a lot to do with my insatiable craving for alcohol. Craving for alcohol. Would you like to know what those traits were? Because, you know, maybe you got them too, since we're all sort of alike. You know, that's why people come up to you and say, man, you're talking about me. You're talking about me. You know what? Because we're all like twins. Exactly. I know that we have this strange idea that we're all different and we're all unique and you don't understand me and I got my problem. We're all basically twins. They look a little different, short, fat, skinny man, woman. But we all think, you know, that's why AA meetings work. Because some guy gets up here, you sincerely tell your story, and say, oh my crap, that's me. He's talking about me. Because we're all twins. You all think that's a scary deal. If you really understand the implications of that. Because when you finally know yourself, then you know everybody else in the room. And when you don't know yourself, and you're not sure of yourself, and you're not confused, you don't know anybody else in the room. You know? That's why sponsors can do really well with people, because before the guy comes up to him and he tells him this confusing story, he thinks he knows, and the sponsor really does know. That's why the sponsor always says, you don't understand. And what he doesn't understand is the only person that doesn't understand is him, and he's the one with the problem. When I was a child, I acquired some of the traits that had a lot to do with my insatiable craving for alcohol. I was brought up in a little town. Some people may think that you drink because you crave alcohol. There is a craving. It talks about the craving of the obsession. But you know, there are people in AA. There are a lot of people in AA. After they stop drinking, maybe for a month or 2 months or 5 years or 10 years, you want to know something? They go back to drinking again. Did you know that? Or they go back to taking pills and then go back to drinking. Or they do something. Did you know that happens in AA? Have you ever seen that? People actually slip after years and months of stopping. You know, right before they take that first drink, you ready for this? They're sober. There ain't no craving. There ain't no craving, there ain't no booze in their body. They just take the drink. You know why? Because of this. Because of what I want. You know why I build with this? Because of worldly clamors. That's all you gotta do is get rid of the worldly clamors. Get rid of the frickin' world. You got an idea for that? I know how you can do it. I know how you could be in the world and not of the world. You know, 2,000 years ago, in this world you'll have problems. Be good of cheer. I've overcome the world. I know how you can overcome the world. How are you going to overcome the world? How are you going to overcome the boss? How are you going to overcome traffic? How are you going to overcome the IRS? How are you going to overcome all the unbelievable shit that's going to happen to you, even if you don't cause it? I know you had a lot of shit that happened to you because you caused it, because when you're driving by drunk, you do get arrested. But believe me, even after you stop drinking, have you figured it out yet? Shit still happens. Life happens. Crap happens. You drive up, you know something? You get in your car, you drive out there, you get hit by a drunk driver. They're just looking to cream you. TV shows, everything, it's all over the place. It's just the world looking to just spear you. It's not looking to keep you sober, it's looking to keep you crazy. That's what, and you know something? And you're sucking on it, you're addicted to it. You love it. What movie are you gonna see tonight? You turn on the TV, you see all these beautiful actors, they're rich, they're famous, they're doing well, all the reality TV shows. And in the back of my mind, you're saying, what a piece of shit am I? Why don't I have a reality TV show? Sure, you're laughing, you don't know what it's like, but you know. So, you know what that is, by the way? That's alcoholism. That's alcoholism. People drink over that shit. Bill Wilson drank over that stuff. And you don't even know what's happening to you. And even as you're thinking it's happening to you, you can't wait to get home and watch the TV. You know why? It's like when you know you shouldn't drink, and you say, I gotta stop drinking, and you keep on drinking anyway. You know you shouldn't watch it, but you keep on watching anyway. You should know you shouldn't do it, but you keep on doing it anyway. You know why? Because you're addicted to it. You know why you're addicted to it? Because you feel like a piece of shit without it. It does the same thing for you that the booze used to do for you. And everybody's doing it, just like the people you used to drink with was doing it, so you think it's okay because everybody's doing it. And the world applauds it. I'm sorry, I know I'm ruining your fucking life. But I get a kick out of it, you know what I mean? I'm 66, I got nothing else to do, you know what I mean? Look, here's the way I figure it. You know, I may not say much, but you know, the point is, if I can get, look, what I really need is about 5 years with each one of you guys, but I figure if I can actually get you walking out of there instead of like a regular AA meeting, thinking shit, you know, thinking about stuff, thinking about, what did that fucking guy say, you know what I mean? I can't believe it, you know? Then you got a shot. You got a shot. When I was a child, would you like to hear the rest of this Bill Wilson thing, what he was talking about? He was talking about the same thing I'm talking, same shit, okay? When I was a child, I acquired some of the traits that had a lot to do with my insatiable crave for alcohol. I was brought up in a little town in Vermont under the shadow of Mount Aeolus. An early recollection is that of looking up at this vast and mysterious mountain, wondering what it meant and whether I could ever climb that high. But, I was presently distracted by my aunt, who, as a fourth birthday present, made me a plate of fudge. For the next 35 years, I pursued the fudge of life and quite forgot about the mountain. God's the mountain. All else is the fudge. This book is all about going after the mountain, even while it's talking to people that are addicted to the fudge. Mountain, you live. Mountain, it's all wonderful. Mountain is the joy of living. Mountain, you need nothing. You don't need the mountain plus the girl. You don't need the mountain plus the guy. You don't need the mountain plus the car. The mountain is enough. It's enough. All you have to do is depend upon the mountain. The mountain is steady. The mountain will never move. The mountain will never let you down. You know, the mountain will never let you down. 3 o'clock in the morning, the mountain's there. You know, the 101 group won't be there. Your sponsor may not be there, but the mountain will always be there for you. You know what I mean? Fudge is gone. Eat it, it's gone. You know, you can talk to people about alcohol. You start talking about the fudge. Vision for you. First part of vision for you. Now and then a serious drinker being dry at the moment says, I don't miss it at all. Doesn't say how long you're sober. Dry at the moment. Don't miss it all. Feel better, work better, having a better time. Doing okay, having a good time at the 101 group. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again because he's not happy with his sobriety, and he doesn't even know he's not happy with his sobriety. You know, he's just treading water. Just treading water, waiting for something bad to happen where it's going to be all over but the shouting. So here we have Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. That's Bill Dotson. That's the man on the bed. Anybody have seen the picture of the man on the bed? I don't even know we have it here. Man on the bed. You know, Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, 1937, 1938. You know, when they were doing this thing, you know, they were doing this deal. They were really doing it. And they have this picture of this guy. If you haven't seen it, it's around all over the place, sitting on a bed in like a t-shirt, one of those old-fashioned t-shirts. And there's Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, and Bill Wilson has the Bible open. And they're talking to him. And the title of that painting, by the way, it's the painting about Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, Bill Dotson. The title of that painting is Came to Believe. That's the title of the painting. It's not Man on the Bed. I call it Man. It's Came to Believe. Well, Bill Dotson's story is in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. Okay? And this is what he says. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. You know, I used to go to meetings. I'd have 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. You know, I was doing the steps. I mean, I was doing the thing. I was sponsoring people. I was doing the whole nine yards. You know, 20 years. I was doing the whole thing. I was doing step meetings. I was doing what I'm doing right now. And yet I would see these guys, like my sponsors, who had like 25, 30, 40 years, you know, I'd see these guys. There weren't a lot of them, but they were there. I'd see them, and I knew there was something more. I knew there was something I hadn't got. I knew there was something I hadn't got, because I was well, but I was like crazy. You understand what I'm saying? I was okay, but I wasn't okay. You know what I mean? I mean, I was better, progress, not perfection. You know, I could tell myself that, but I wasn't as good as I could. I wasn't like they. They had what I wanted. I wanted what they had, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. I didn't even know what they had. I didn't even know how to get it, but I knew they had it. I knew there was something more. I knew there was something I hadn't got. I used to go to their step meetings. I'd say, maybe some of it will rub off. Maybe I'll hear the secret. Maybe if I just go out to coffee with them, just hang out with them, you know, I'll wake up one day and I'll have it. You know, whatever the hell it is. You know, how do you get that deal? What's the secret? You know, I'm not drinking. I'm going to meetings. I'm doing everything. I'm sponsoring people, and I'm still a banana. You know, what's going on here? You know what I mean? You know, I'd go up to some guy in the room who's like crying. He had 3 days, 3 months, and I'd say, look, fella, listen to me. You don't drink, and you go to meetings, it's going to be okay. And I was sincere. I'd say, it's going to be okay. He'd say, really? I said, I'm guarantee you, you don't drink, and you go to meetings, it's going to be incredible. It's going to be okay. get in my car and I drive away. I said, when the hell is it going to be okay for you? When are you going to be okay? It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more. Something I hadn't got. I went to a meeting, I told you about Al Kenny last time, making fit. Went to a meeting, guys talking, doing what I'm doing now, at like around 35 years. You know, incredible, incredible. You know, he had the deal, he had it. He was there, you know, helping people, lifting them up, loving on people. He left the room. I said to my sponsor, I said, that guy's great. He says, he's dying of cancer. I didn't understand him when he first, I said, what? He says, he's dying. 6 months later, he was dead. Guy's doing a meeting. He's lifting up people, doesn't even mention it. You know, I'm used to discussion meetings. Oh, I got a hangnail. You know, I mean, yeah, whatever. This guy's not even, it's like he doesn't have a problem in the world. I knew there was something more, hey, listen, you know, I was sober and he was sober. There was a different deal going on. Bill Wilson calls it the next frontier, emotional sobriety. He said the real problem with alcoholic is unhealthy dependencies. I'll be okay as long as I got this. I'll be okay as long as I have that. As long as I don't lose this. As long as I get that. As long as this is happening. Sobriety, physical and emotional sobriety and spiritual sobriety depending upon having shit or being something. Having a title, having a job, this, that, and the other thing. How do you get rid of that? So it says, I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't gotten. I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill Wilson at my house, talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said this. This is what Bill Wilson said. It's in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sorry if it offends you. It's in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Call them up and tell them to rip this shit out of the book, okay? Say there's some guy here with 34 years that's spewing this shit and reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and hurting young people, okay? Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, Henrietta, the Lord, that's why I use the word Lord, not the toothpaste jar, and Lord, you know, we all know what he's referring to. The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling people. The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I want to keep talking about it and telling other people. By the way, you know why I'm here tonight? It's the Lord's been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people.
Amen.
That's the only reason I'm here. Not for the 50-mile drive. I just love telling this story. Because he saved me. He lifted me up from the snake pit. I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing and he had given God the credit for having done it. He's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. You think everybody in AA feels that way? They ask Bill Wilson, what do you think of people that don't drink and don't go to meetings? He says, I have no use for them. They have no gratitude. They don't give a shit. They're just sober. I have no use for them. I have no gratitude. I'm here to perform his work. That's what it says. We stay close to him. We perform his work well. You know, if you're here to perform his work, you know what happens? You don't have to worry about all the stuff you're worrying about. You're just concerned about his will, doing his will. And isn't that what this program's all about, whether you know it or not? When I was, one of the things that the books they found that were absolutely essential was 1 Corinthians 13. This is the book talked about in the good old timers. 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the book of James. 1 Corinthians 13 says, when I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. When I became a man, I put childish things away. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know even as I am known. Put childish things away. You think everybody in AA puts childish things away? 90% of stuff that's talked about in AA is childish shit. It's not mature shit, it's childish. It's, you know, and 90% of stuff that are talked about in Alcoholics Anonymous, you can find talked about by 10 and 12 year olds. 90% of the shit that people worry about in AA, teenagers are worried about. I don't care if you can be 50 years old. We got 50-year-old teenagers here. They don't put childish things away. They just want to worry about childish shit. They don't want to hear about this crap. So, let's go to the real good stuff. You know, you thought, let's go to the heavy-duty stuff. The serious stuff. no more fun and games, okay? Can you guys handle it? Okay, Dr. Bob and the good old timers. So what were they doing between 1935 and 1939? What was AA? What? So how do you do this deal? You know what I mean? By the way, there's a great line in the Bible. It's a different place in the Bible. It's also in the big book, by the way. It's in the big book, but they do in the big book? They cover it up. I know where it comes from because I'm familiar with the Bible. So I go to Bible study. I know where it comes from. It's clear where it comes from, but they don't say it in Bible terms. They say you can't do God and mammon. You can't do God. You can't do the God thing and the world thing. You can't, my sponsor said, would you rather be right? You want to be right or happy? I said, both. He said, you can't do it. He said, because if you got to be right, then you're always got to have the last word. You can be pissed off. You're always getting into arguments. You want to be right. And I thought he was wrong for about 5 years. And then when I started getting the shit beat out of me and all that sort of stuff and having bad times, I decided I'd rather be right. I'd rather be happy rather than right. And that's when I started realizing that my wife was always right and I was always wrong. I always plead guilty. Yes, I am the worst husband in the world. Yes, I do never take out the garbage. Yes, you're absolutely right. And because the fine, I just go straight to the fine. What would be the punishment? A blouse. Okay, there you go. I can always pay it. And we stop with the arguments. I just made up my mind that she was right and I was wrong. And that was it. And now we have a happy marriage because she likes being right. You know, and all I have to do is tell her she's right and about everything. That's all, you know. So here we go. So what were they doing in 1935 to 1939? Here it is on page 101, conference approved of Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. On the other hand, we were taking them upstairs and getting them on their knees to surrender, which I felt was very important. The surrender was more than important, it was a must. Bobby, who came to AA in February 1937, recalled that after 5 or 6 days in the hospital, when you had indicated that you were serious, they told you to get down on your knees by the bed and say a prayer to God, admitting you were powerless over alcohol and your life was unmanageable. Furthermore, you had to state that you believed in a higher power who would return you to sanity. So much for steps 2 and 3. So that got steps 2 and 3 got wiped out before the first meeting. Sort of cuts down a lot of the bullshit, you know what I mean? You know, qualifies the people real fast whether they really want to do this thing, how bad it is. There you can see the beginning of the 12 steps. He said, we call that the surrender. We call that the surrender. They demanded it. They didn't really give a shit about your feelings or whether it hurt your feelings or stuff like that. You couldn't go to a meeting until you did it. By the way, what do they say? Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly fought up. Anybody, you guys have to do that before you get to this meeting? If by accident you didn't make it in the hospital, you had to make it in the upstairs bedroom over the Williamson's house. Dorothy S.M. recalled the 1937 meetings when the men would all disappear upstairs and all us women would be nervous and worried about what was going on. After about a half an hour or so, down would come the new man, shaking, white, serious, and grim. And all the people who were already in AA would come trooping down after him. They were pretty reluctant to talk about what had happened, but after a while they would tell us they had a real surrender. I often wonder how many people that come in now would survive that an experience like that, a regular old-fashioned prayer meeting, says Dorothy, who was then married to AA member Clarence S., the brewmaster. So I got down on my knees in 1980, take about 5 minutes more of your time. I'm just going to tell you a little something about this deal. The second step says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. It sort of happens over a period of time, right? But the third step, you think, and I thought, happens like in a minute. You just go and get down on your knees. I did it in the bathroom. You say a third step prayer. You know, in the big book that we read all the time, it says, the A, B's, and C's, we can't manage our own life. You can't manage your life. Don't bother thinking. You can't manage your life. No human power is going to help you. Only God would if he was sought. And then right after that, it says, being convinced about that. Convinced. But now it's step 3. You know what I found out in my life? Being convinced takes about 25, 30 years. Hey, listen, I'm not putting it down. I'm just telling you. The third step happens like that. The second step takes about 30 years. You know, I mean, I'm just telling you, this is the way it is with me. Because, there's convinced and then there's convinced. You know, I got down on my knees. I'll tell you, I got down on my knees December 25th, 1980. You know, when the alcoholism was at its worst, when I knew I couldn't stop drinking, I thought my life was over. I got kicked out of a Christmas party in Noche Buena. I went home and turned the TV. There's some preacher on. You know, he was talking about his testimony, how Jesus could help me and everything. I got down on my knees. I accepted Jesus in my life, which isn't a big deal, except I was a Jewish boy from New York. You know what I mean? And, you know, big deal for me. But I was desperate. You can't rob an alcohol of its desperation. All you need in here is desperation. The problem is most people aren't desperate enough. You know, they're just not desperate. You know what I mean? So I came in there, I did that. I thought nothing had happened. 30 days later, all of a sudden, something happened to me. And, you know, I said to some guy, I need help, I can't stop drinking. I go and I pick up a white chip. I surrendered. I surrendered December of 1980. I may not have stopped. I surrendered on my knees December of 1980. I surrendered again when I picked up that white chip. I surrendered again 6-7 months later when I got down on my knees. It was a different type of surrender. I wasn't drinking anymore. I had my job. Everything was okay. I was feeling pretty much okay, but I just wanted more. I knew there was something more. I surrendered again. When you pick up a white chip and you walk up, it may not be getting down your knees, but you're walking up in front of people. It's sort of like a surrender. It's like takes humility. You got to walk in front of people. It's like saying, I need your help. You know what I mean? Which is tough for an alcoholic. I surrendered again when I went to the bathroom and got on my knees and said that third step prayer. 15 years, but you want to know what the problem is? When I was drinking, I was sucking on the world. I was sucking on the world. I was a lounge lizard. I was after that gal. I was after that car. I was sucking on the world. It was killing me. But I knew of no other way of doing it. Everybody I knew was doing that deal. I thought that's the way the world worked. You know, just get successful, get money, get sex, get this, get laid, whatever. You know what I mean? And that would fix me, and it was killing me. And I didn't even know it was killing me because at the same time it's killing me, I think it's the answer. I think it's the answer. You know, I'm just not getting enough of it. And it's killing actors. It's killing actors. It's killing, you know, it's killing me. I come to AA. I stop drinking. I get down to my knees. I say this stuff. All of a sudden, I'm getting a little bit of the spirituality. I'm saying the Lord's Prayer. I'm doing this sort of stuff. I'm feeling a little bit better. But you want to know what the problem is? I'm still not surrendered. You know why? Because I'm doing the God and man thing. In here, I'm doing the God thing. I'm even reading a few things out there. But out there, you know what I'm doing? I'm still chasing the same shit. I'm struggling with the world. I'm in hand-to-hand combat with the world. I mean, this AA thing is good and God is good and everything's great, but what do you do when you need money? What do you do when you're lonely and you want a girlfriend? You want to, you know, I'm out there struggling and you want something? I'm like dying. I'm dying. I'm in rooms. I'm in rooms. You know what I want to talk about? I want to talk about how I can get all the shit I think I need or not lose the stuff I think I have to have, you know what I mean, and still feel okay and not feel the way I feel. And when am I going to feel better? And some old goof wants to talk to me about God and says, you don't understand, I'm talking about money. You know, it's easy to talk about God, but when I need money, I need a place to stay, I need a gal, I need a guy. When I was 15 years sober, you know, I started going to a Bible study. I'm not saying you got to go to Bible study. I'm just telling this is my story. Start going to Bible study. You know what it's like for a Jewish kid from New York who's going to AA where they're all putting down the Bible, putting down Jesus, all putting down that stuff, to have some guy tap you on the shoulder because I wanted more. I knew there was something I hadn't got. I read this thing enough to know that I had to seek it more. Where am I going to seek it? I had been to all the AA meetings. I was doing the AA stuff. There wasn't anything who had more in the AA rooms. Started going to Bible. You know what that was? That's a surrender. That's doing something that you're scared to do, you don't want, but you want something, you want God more. I became a member of the church. I became a deacon of the church. I started a ministry. I started doing other things. I surrendered more and more and more. The more I surrendered to him, the more I got involved with people that were talking about, you know when you're involved with somebody who's talking about getting laid or somebody who's talking about a girl, a guy's, you know, you walk away from there. You know what you think about? You're thinking about that shit. You know, when you're involved in talking, a guy who's talking about sports or about cars or about stuff or about jobs or about money, you walk away, you're thinking about that crap. You know something? That crap's killing me. When you go to church, when you go to a, that's why, believe it or not, in the big book, it says they encourage church membership. All these guys, Bill Wilson talked about, they're members of churches. They had clergymen all over the place in him. Ed Dowling and everything, the stuff that you hear in A rooms put down, that's what they were thoroughly doing. The thoroughness that they were doing this thing, the way they focused on God in 1935 to 1939 is laughed at in AA and put down in AA now. Because it makes treatment centers nervous. They don't know how to talk about it. So they say it's more a psychological thing. It was never a psychological thing. It was always a religious thing. It was always really. Even Bill Wilson, when Abby comes to me, he told me a simple religious idea. You know, you're not gonna do it your way or do it the world's way and get what they got. You'll get sober. There are people, you will not drink, but you will not be rocketed in the fourth dimension. You will not experience much of heaven. You will not experience the joy of living. You'll just be able to pick up that medallion, that 20-year medallion, you know, and be on your third marriage. Or broke or something like that. Well, I'm not here to make you like me, you know what I mean? I'm here to tell my experience. The more I hung out with these people that were focused on God, the more I devoted my life to God, because I am an egotistic, vain piece of crap, selfish piece of crap. The more I involved myself with that deal, the more I focused on Him, the less I was worried about the material stuff. The less I was worried about the sex, and I'm a sex whack job, you know what I mean? The less I was worried about the girls, and I'm a girl whack job. The less I was worried about the money, and I'm a money whack job, the more I focused on Him. The less I was worried. The less I was worried about anything, the more I focused on Him. The more I thought about Him. Read the Bible, started thinking about Him. You want some? It's a great antidote for the worldly clamors. And I'm not saying I got it perfect. Nobody says they got it perfect. Nobody's completely free of fear. But you want to know something? As you start focusing on Him and all that sort of stuff, and all that other stuff falls away, and you start thinking about it, you really start experiencing those promises. Not for 5 minutes like you experience for 5 minutes. Not for an hour like you experience it. You experience it for months. How would you like to experience the promises for the month? For months. Everybody reads the promises in the room. The greatest thing in the world. The promises, the promises. They are great. I wonder how many people are experiencing them all the time in their lives. And you guys think, and probably you guys think, well, that's a bunch of bullshit. Well, you don't live in my head. You don't know. You just don't know. That's your problem. You just don't know. I guess you just have to live 34 years and do this thing and battle the cancer and battle all this stuff and constantly turn to Him and turn to Him to turn it. Because that's what does it. That's what gives you a new perspective. That's what it says in the 12 and 12. It says the way we get a new perspective by 1,000 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. Your humiliation, your crushing is not there. You're not done with that. If you think your crushing happened when you out there with the drinking, get ready for the rocket. Get ready for the e-ride in Disney World. You're involved in the world. The world will crush you as fast as anything else. You're going to have some shit happen to you, and you're going to have to deal with it. And you want some? The one-on-one group ain't going to help you, and you're sponsoring, and you want some? Some point in time, you're just going to have to turn to Him or not and tough it out. And then maybe you could be one of those guys at 20 years, say, I say, how you doing? You could say, I'm hanging in there. I'm hanging in there. You can do that. You can have the hanging in there sobriety. If you want that, it's free. It's available to you. Most people have hanging in there. They say, well, my life is shit, but at least I haven't drank today. They're not sponsoring anybody. They're not helping anybody. They're not doing anything. They're just sort of taking their moral and physical temperature. Well, I got money in the bank. My life is good. I don't have money in the bank. My life is bad. You know, they're just telling you things are good, things are bad. You know, whatever it is, they're just sort of, it's all about how they feel. They're just worshiping their feelings. If that's the sobriety you want, it's freely available in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what most people have. Most people have the kind of sobriety where their whole day, all they do is think about themselves and how they feel and how they're doing. If they're feeling good, then sobriety is great. If they're feeling bad, there's something wrong. Just because you're feeling bad doesn't mean anything's wrong. Maybe you should feel bad. Just because you're feeling guilty doesn't mean there's something wrong. Maybe you have something to feel guilty about. You know? The only person who feels like he wants... You know who feels like they want to feel good all the time? Alcoholics feel that way. That's why they drink. Because they can't stand feeling sad, bad, or any feelings whatsoever, as a matter of fact. Yeah. I know. I'm done. I think I've said enough for you guys. Let me get out of here. Okay, thank you. All
right. Tell Russell what you've been looking forward to all week. Tell him.
You speaking.
I've been looking forward to it all week.